Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, latest post covering finance and property news. Monday evening once again, and Edwin is back for another rant. Hey Edwin, how are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin, but let's start the rant with the title of the rant, and let's call it Don't Shoot the Messengers. We're just messengers, Martin.
Honestly, exactly. And a good place to start that would be, I don't know whether you saw this, but global concern grows for new pandemic after research team in China detects COVID-like virus in bats with same potential to infect humans. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why stock markets on Friday dropped. So, you can't make this stuff up. There's so much stupidity going on. We've got the resetting of the world order. Trump basically, saying, I'm only interested in the US and I won't be global policing anymore. You've got a right-wing swing in Germany. You've got Albo, not going to the election, but really going to the election and handing money left, right, and centre all over the place. You really come in. And then we had a rate cut, of course, and now everybody's saying, well, of course, that's going to change the world and everyone's going to sort of start buying property. And, I don't know. Every week, we always find plenty to talk about because there is so much going on at the moment. So don't shoot the messenger, folks.
Yeah, for me, the day I thought you were going to say it, and elbow swinging both ways. I thought that's what you were going to say. I didn't say it.
No, nor indeed did I. Well, but just on that, yeah. So you've got Albo coming in and saying he's going to do some bulk billing, and then Dutton matches it. Don't want to have a fight about health. We've got the Wyala situation where effectively the Prime Minister is throwing money at Wyala to try and invest in the nation. And, I have to say, Edwin, that I understand at one level why. But on the other hand, the problem with Wyala is energy. The energy costs is the critical issue here. And so what we've got is effectively pedaling uphill really hard because, of course, the costs of producing steel in Australia are so high because of the astronomically high energy costs, which, of course, were created by poor government policy. So that's another example of some stupidity. And then, as we said, the RBA they cut, but people were a bit baffled by it, why on earth, and then they were not quite sure. Bullock said, well, maybe the bank was too late in hiking rates and we don't want to be caught out again. Of course, articles like, well, it won't necessarily solve the great Australian malaise. But as you highlighted, it's changed the game with regards to how people think about property.
Oh, look, it has. And this is just going back a step there, Martin, isn't it interesting how both sides of politics play around with our money, right? They're bidding. They've got a bidding war as to who's going to buy the vote. Who's going to buy my vote, Dusty's vote, and everybody else's votes. But the thing is, they're not using their own money. They're using the taxpayers' money, and that's all it is. And a lot of it is going to be based around promises that are never kept. I'm still waiting for the $1.2 million homes. Many are still waiting for that. Still waiting for we'll see what happens with the pause in migration post the election. If the Liberals are getting, which as you and I know, it's all smoke and mirrors. Change the name of the visa, change the number of the visa, and Wooshka. It's not nothing to see here, folks. The RBA cut definitely has changed the landscape. And as what you and I said, Martin, and this is clearing the air now, because what you and I said last week, and that was how it was going to, how that cut, a cut was going to translate in layman's terms, or more to the point, how it was going to affect those that were sitting on the sideline. it was dropped, and we said that there was going to be an emotional jolt. And I believe that is what we are seeing across many markets, not only many of Sydney's markets, but many markets across Australia, because of the various reasons which are you and I've been talking about, but many don't seem to be listening. And that is the those that are sitting on the sideline that are cashed up and are waiting, and they're thinking, hold on a minute, if the rates are cut this month, are we going to have a consecutive cut next month, which is your typical trend? Is that trend going to follow? But before that happens, I'm just going to jump in. Not that the $50 or $80 per week is going to make a big difference to the mortgage repayments. But again, I emphasize the point. There is a lot of cash. There is a lot of money that has been sitting on the sidelines, and a lot of people are jumping in. Now, going a little bit further with the commentary that we discussed with regard to the Silent Tigers and many other people that have come in, families, young families, individuals that have come in with PR over the last 18 months that have been sitting around, renting in various parts of Sydney to see which areas they will make that final move to buy into. And that was going to take 6 to 12 months, and here we are, a rate cut. You've got the rate cut, Silent Tigers, new kids on the block. You've got Kryptonians, Bitcoinians that have been cashed up, jumping in, and you've got a game on our hands, and it's rather interesting. But it's what I say, Martin. Don't shoot the messengers, because we're just putting out things as they happen, not as they're reported 2, 3 months down the track. We've been warning the people. We've been telling the people, should this happen? Should that not happen? There's the Trump effect. So there's all these headwinds that are affecting those that wanted to come into the market. And here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, interesting. Tomorrow evening, I'm going to have a live discussion with Robbie Barwick about the broader geopolitical shifts and this idea of have we moved from the global rules-based order to the global disorder. So that's sort of at one level. But down on the ground among the property land, and in fact, you put this slide up, I think, earlier on Twitter about dreams and nightmares. You know, you got to be clear about what's really going on. Don't be misled by all of the rubbish that's being written at the moment. There's tons of rubbish around the place from those who tell stories of people who are suddenly prompt to going to buy. The fact that listings are rising, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. So it's really important, and I have to come back to this wonderful, important point again, Edwin, that people need to understand locally what's happening, right? So these high-level, highfalutin stories are not that relevant. You need to understand what's happening on the ground, because I can point to areas across Australia where prices are still very, very buoyant, and there's a lot of interest, a lot of enthusiasm, but I can also point to other areas, even now, where property prices are still sliding back and where the aspiration to buy is evaporating because of the affordability problems. So this generic story about suddenly the world has changed dramatically left or right with regard to property is not actually helping anybody. And what I find frustrating here is that those who know better, or those who should know better, both in the industry and beyond, and all the observers and economists and things, they're just throwing stuff out into the ether. But people don't understand their motivation for doing it, right? It's about clicks, it's about eyeballs, it's about just being seen to be saying something. It's not helping people trying to make good decisions on the ground.
100%, Martin, and this is why you and I've been saying for a very long time. We're in one of the posts, you and I, in one of the comments that have briefly glanced through. I don't reply to most of the comments after the post that people make. They refer to us as before the pandemic, that we were bears. Look, I honestly can say that up to 2019 and around the election of 2019 and post the election of 2019, I was very much commenting on the state of the real estate industry in terms of the businesses in terms of sales that were happening in term or not happening in terms of the many frustrations that businesses were facing to keep the doors open as well and obstacles as well as the fact that a good 85-90% of real estate agents that were in the selling in the you know, on the field selling weren't even making the award wage, which is you know around about $75,000 per annum. And you know, there's a you know the rest were making the you know above the award, and there's the you know 1-2% that are making you know you could say that are making squillions out of the industry. Now, and we were commenting back then, 18 and 19, the many officers that I knew that were on the third and fourth credit card, if you recall, Martin. I was sharing about how they were, and these were business owners, licensees in charge of offices, large offices across Sydney that were running on the third and fourth credit card. And we're talking about credit cards, not of you know, $5,000 or $10,000. We're talking credit cards that were maxed out at $20,000, $40,000, $50,000, and they were just you know, going from one credit card to the next to keep the doors open. But for the pandemic, but for the lockdowns, is what saved many small business, many real estate offices, you know, many industries across the landscape. And then we got a shift. And that shift was what you and I noted immediately, how the stock numbers or the numbers on market changed dramatically. The appetite to sell changed because everybody was locked down. And then post that, post all those different you know, things that government policies that were put in place that controlled the market. It was more of a control of the market rather than allowing it to you know to evolve naturally. Then we got internal controls. By when I say internal controls, I mean Australian control, Australian government controls. Then we got external controls, outside forces that began to control, our economic climate and what was going to happen or not happen, such as the post that you just put earlier on. I mean, where is the push? Is you know who's pushing what? Is the to get us to where? So after 2019, when we hit 2020. The landscape changed, and my outlook on property and what was going to happen with real estate in general terms, you could see a very distinct transition or very distinct force or the very my commentary around was again reporting on what was happening on the ground, but it was more about how stock levels just dropped. Demand increased, properties, started going through the roof. And this is what we've been doing consistently over the last, 4 years as well, on the continuum, even before, is just reporting what is happening on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis, month-by-month basis to keep our viewers and our followers informed. So that's what I'm saying. Don't shoot the messengers. We're telling you the story. We're telling you how the shifts and the changes and the and we were ahead of many stories, many reports of what the government was going to do. What were they trying to get away with? Then we got the immigration, of course. You and I spoke about that before the election and what was going to happen. You're pulling the levers and everything else. And here we are. So this is where again we saw the shift last week. We spoke about the what would happen if there was a rate cut, and not so much about the logical aspect that it's only going to make a $50 to $80 difference in the average mortgage, but the simple fact that people are just scared of missing out again. But when you've got these headwinds of immigration, when you've got open borders, with regards to the money coming in from overseas, with the, yeah, Dutton talks about stopping and Labor are also on the bandwagon. But until that happens, stopping foreign investors from buying established homes that were never allowed. Allowed to buy anyway, and if they did buy under a student visa, they had to sell when they went back home anyway. But everything's changing, everything's shifting, everything's changing. But until that happens, we are where we are. This is the natural transition. This is the natural. We're reporting on what is happening now. If things continue, and if the libs or the labs do bring in that policy, is it going to be 6 months down the track when that's going to be enacted? Is it going to be 10 months down the track? Is it going to be 12 months down the track? When is it actually going to be put into law, put into practice in order to stop the so-called influx of foreign investors buying into established properties? But again, I say, and as I've been saying for a while, for a very long time, the desired properties are what the locals want, are the freestanding homes or the older, three-story walk-ups, and they are in hot demand because we're not reproducing them. The value is in the land. The value is not in a block of air, encompassed by cankered brickwork or cankered concrete that's going to have issues down the track when you're 13, 14, 20, 25 levels above ground. That's not what people want. That's not what people are desiring. And unfortunately, that is the supply. That is what's in very, very low supply across many markets in Australia, and more to the point across Sydney markets. And this is what people are looking for. And that 25 basis point drop just created that jolt that created a lot of emotion, and hence the reason why there's a lot of commentary around some of the high prices that got achieved across many auctions in Sydney.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And just from contextual point of view, I think Christopher Joy was quite accurate when he said that the RBA rate cut is a very big deal to avoid the potential for deep rate cuts being the central election issue. Martin Place has bent over backwards this week to dismiss its own neutral numbers. And, he's basically arguing there really wasn't a very strong case for a cut. Interestingly, of course, the discussion also followed on quite quickly because Chalmers then came out and said, well, if interest rates are down, landlords should be dropping their reins, right? That didn't go down very well. The slowdown in rental price growth in the past 12 months added further pressure on landlords, et cetera, et cetera. The fact is that we're not going to see rents going reverse. That was a political spin on it. But you make a really important point about the future of housing. And of course, there was this article here that apartment droughts have hit the Labour housing goal. The fact is that it's not happening. So, the aspiration is to build more high rise, despite the fact people don't want to live in high rise particularly. And in fact, the New South Wales policy is now to override council restrictions to deliver 112,000 homes. And they call out some of the areas in this particular, around Randwick and Lane Cove and Mosman and North Sydney. Interestingly, Sydney's north were actually a third of all those affected. And I think this is very important for people to understand, right? So this is now significantly higher properties in terms of height in some of those areas, in places like Cremorne. I used to live in Cremorne. Cremorne was a nice small suburb, but they're now saying along Military Road and Spit Junction, they want to be able to build multi-high, very high properties. And it is also just contextualizing that with two other interesting pieces of data, right? So this was actually the story from Victoria, where they've actually released some high-rise plans in Hampton East and Brighton East. And the point is that they're now looking to up between 8 and 12 stories in and around some of the transport links. So, do you really want to see this massive surge in mini apartments in and around these areas? And the implication for people who are already living there, is one thing. The implication also for those people who will be coming into the area if they buy into these is something else. And the third point is that it completely messes with, as you say, land values versus property values. And I worry that we're going to see more of the North Ryde effect because, you know, I keep highlighting North Ryde apartment prices are lower now than they were in 2017.
Look, the other thing, apart from North Ryde, when you're looking at the Upper North Shore areas that you mentioned earlier on, where they're wanting to build high-rise developments and they want to break ground to build high-rise developments because they feel that there's where a greater need. Again, this is where the government or government policies don't, or those that are involved with enacting government policies and the like, don't really understand because they're not active in the sector. They don't understand the cost. We're getting closer and closer to a per average build for an apartment or a dog box or whatever you want to call it, a unit. The cost, we're getting ever so close to $650,000. And when you start looking at the NCC, which is the National Construction Code, and how they've got to build under the code and under the SEP 65, if you're building around that, or BASICs, when you've got to incorporate all that, the cost of construction is forever becoming higher and higher. So you've got land values that are going to increase in terms of per lot as development sites, and construction costs are forever going north. So you've got to, just to put our viewers in perspective, if you're buying an apartment in the Upper North Shore, that something that's brand new, a two-bedroom apartment that's brand new, they've got to be sold around the 1.5 million mark in order for the builder and the developer to make any money whatsoever. So when you're not looking at, let's say, on average, there are about 72 square meters, not including the, in some cases, you include the parking area or the parking bay in that 72 square meters. But we're getting closer to the 57, 58 square meter for a two bedroom apartment, Martin. And this is, things are becoming tighter. Bedrooms are becoming smaller, living areas are becoming smaller, but the corridors, the passageways, the doorways that take up a lot of that FSR, or floor space ratios, are taking up in order to accommodate for the new codes and to facilitate those that are getting on in age and to facilitate the needs for people that have walkers and are on wheelchairs and the like. So the apartments are getting smaller, the costs are escalating, and then on top of that, as you always bring up the point, is also the infrastructure that's got to be created in order to accommodate the greater mass. And we are a people, we are a nation of being motorists. We can't rely on public transport. Look, over the weekend, over last weekend, Saturday, the train line from all the way back to Orange, Bathurst and Orange, into the city, the mountains train line, was at a standstill. You had to rely on a bus, on buses. To give you an example, to get from Hazelbrook, right, to get from Hazelbrook to Parramatta, it would take you 2.5 hours by bus because they were doing works across that. Then you couple that with stop work, and strikes and this and that, and really we are not as much as government would like us to use public transport, they're really not facilitating it for us to use the public transport, because and during the week or even on weekends, I wouldn't dare travel in public transport in some of the train lines past 10 o'clock. As tough as I may think I am, and as brave as I may want to be, but there's some areas where I just will not venture alone past a certain hour.
No, well, I quite often would go between Thirroul and the centre of Sydney on the South Coast line, and that was about 1 hour and 20, give or take. But at certain times of day, well, you're lucky if you've got a seat in the first place, but also you have to be a little bit careful later on. This whole issue of public transport is something that's, not actually invested in appropriately. And it's also not reliable. And, we've had industrial action recently, but even beyond that, previously there was issues. So it is, as you say, reliant on the road transport system, which is also not very good and underinvested in. But I have to tell you, just this article that got my attention, suggesting that you could get a bells and whistles apartment, including, all the bells and whistles around resort-style living, swimming pools, et cetera, for $500,000, right? And well, okay, look at where it is. maybe some of those areas might not be as attractive, but I wonder what the quality of the construction is, and I wonder on how much will the monthly fees and charges be for the existing facilities that are going to be provided, and will they continue to be provided down the track? That's the other question which people need to ask themselves, because it may look nice on day one, but I've had several conversations with people who've bought into these sorts of apartments with facilities provided by the block, and actually over time they tend to degrade. The quality of the construction is relatively low, and so you end up with very significant fees and charges in later years, and those people are not necessarily putting those into the mix when they decide whether it's a good buy or not.
No, and this is you hit the nail on the head, and this is where my recommendation to as recently as my daughter's boyfriend for just under $500,000 I helped him buy an apartment in Westmead in oldest old apartment that was built in the early 80s, and it's bigger. It's got a ga it's it has a garage on the lower on the ground floor, and but it doesn't have all those facilities of the newer apartments around Westmead and those areas where you're paying, and they're not even that high. They're only six levels, seven levels, some of them, and but you're paying exorbitant amounts. In one instance, you're paying something like $3,500 a quarter on top of. You can buy for $600,000, and that's without a swimming pool, and that's without all the bells and whistles and gyms and everything else. People don't realize what that means in terms of insurance costs, in terms of liability, in terms of, as you said, 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the track. Has it been ma well maintained? Is the upkeeping consistent? Are the strata managers doing the job and keeping up with the regulatory requirements in order to keep that the owner's corporation protected, which I can tell you now in most cases they won't be, and you've got a lot of issues on your hands. I've done many videos and reports across many social media platforms for many years, for decades, as to the deficiencies and the shortcomings of older units, as well as more the badly built newer units, complexes where you've got mold, and other issues around the common areas, where trip hazards, flammable cladding, not up to code in with fire ordinances and so forth. I mean, and it's and the list goes on and on and on. So yeah, you can buy into them if you're prepared to fork out. I'll tell you what, Martin, you're better off going and buying a house in the outskirts of Melbourne. You've got a better chance of survival. You got a better chance of survival there than you do getting into a high-rise development there, with all these facilities, so-called facilities in Sydney. And as you said, look at where they are. These are what I call that eventually become the million the million dollar pretty soon they're going to be the trillion dollar the billion dollar ghettos, because that's bad management, bad construction, issue after issue after issue. Nobody should be able to, and you can't rent, and you can't even rent them out in most cases.
Absolutely. Well, people need to be quite cautious. And you said earlier on, of course, that people are therefore still aspiring to buy standalone properties. And this one came up, Matt Barry, Sydney house prices rapidly approaching $5 million, absolutely cooked. This was actually one in Lane Cove. But you've got to be a little bit, careful, because of course, at 695 squares, this is not just effectively a property that's going to stay as it is it?
No, look, you've got the new state regulations that have, or the under the new state regulations, you can do more than more, you can build more than a duplex. But when you look at that property on face value, I haven't done the background research on it. I didn't get a chance to call the agent today. I was going to call the agent today and get an idea as to who bought it. I wasn't there at the auction. I was intrigued by all the commentary on X around it, and the many comments that were made about that particular sale. But look, what I can say, Martin, is that at worst case scenario, it's a duplex site, and at a du as a duplex site, it's they paid on the money. They paid the $4.2 million, which is what it's worth. So per lot, it's just over 2 million. And the builder, the developer, once they finish that build, if they do build it, if it was bought by a builder or a developer, I tend to think it was. I would say that after they build and they resell, they'll be walking away with a couple of million dollars in their pocket, before tax. So it's not a bad proposition. It's interesting the fanfare that people made about it because of the higher price, without the understanding of what we've been saying all along is the value of the land. And with the new instruments of the new policies around the New South Wales state level to the new controls that have been put in place, technically, if this falls under that, you could build four dwellings on that block. And the more you build on there, obviously, the more you're gonna make on the other side. I mean, this all comes into hand in hand with this property is within the kilometer radius of the shopping center, and that's one of the prerequisites of being able to take advantage of the new controls that Mintz has brought in. But if you look at it from a standalone house, what's it worth? Look, it was always worth 3.4 as a standalone house, because that is what that market demands. That is what the market demands. Although it was guided at 3.2, it was always around the 3.4, 3.5, which is take 5% either way. In terms of the land value, according to the Valuer General, that block of land, the unimproved value of that block of land is only around sits only around 2,000, but that's because they haven't adjusted. They haven't made the adjustments for the new controls that have been brought in order to give that that to facilitate builders and developers to build more around these areas that are in high demand for housing as opposed to apartments. So that's the difference. And this is where people have got to, like you said, this is where people have got to be very, very careful. But one of the biggest takeaways for me after reading about it or reading the post that Matt put out and doing a little bit of background on it and just checking things out online and where it is, where it was. It's the fact that this is synonymous with what's happening in a lot of other areas where duplex sites are in high demand for those the developers that are moving have moved away from building apartments, but they still need to keep their machine rolling. They still need to keep the machine operating. Otherwise, they'll lose the tradespeople and they'll lose that they've worked with for many years. They'll lose their workforce, and to train a new workforce to build and to develop alongside of you is very difficult, very costly, very hard, and more so when materials are going up. When costs are going up, you need to have the right team around you, and also because of the stringent governance that new developments come under as well. So, yeah, look, it was an interesting post, but you've really got to dissect it. You really got to open up. But hey, although Matt in one of his comments in under that post, he said, "Oh, yeah, this." Something along the lines, I'm just going to paraphrase it. He said that he grew up around that area where, when he was young, and it was a not a nice area. There are many areas in Sydney that weren't nice areas, 20, 30, 35 years ago, 40 years ago, depending on however long you lived there. Others also commented on the fact that it was that they grew up around there as well, and it was shitty, this, and this and that. Hey, in today's arena, 6 months is a long time away. And when you start comparing home values, and when you start comparing freestanding home values and land value from 5, 10, 15 years ago, you really, I must say, Martin, and I know Matt's a very intelligent person, but I must say that some people sometimes just don't understand or have closed their ears and eyes to what's happening, and the demographic change that many areas of Sydney that I've seen over the last 35 years, working in the industry, being involved in the industry, buying, selling, renovating, being in real estate, property management, sales, and the like. Things have changed. 6 months is a long time these days, let alone 5 years, 10 years. I mean, this hub has changed dramatically, and properties, land there in that area, so close to the shops, is going to be in very high demand.
Absolutely. And it's interesting looking at the land valuations from the New South Wales Valuation Office. I was doing some research for somebody the other day, and I was quite aghast at just how much the land valuations in their system have risen. I was actually looking down Thurl Way, and their land values have doubled since I last looked, which was about, I don't know, 3 years ago. That's just amazing. Now, in Melbourne, it's interesting because Catherine Cashmore made a post, domain auction results healthy, volumes this weekend. Still, everything I saw sold. Rate drop has helped some more than others. And as you said, is the emotion around the rate drop the fix for the Melbourne property market slump? What do you think?
Well, look, I can tell you one thing. The WeChat chatters, there is a great WeChat chatter group that are just waiting, waiting to see what happens. And obviously, a lot of the downturn in that market is based around government policy. If there's a shift in policy down in Melbourne, well, then it's going to be northward bound. This is just the beginning for, I guess, for a perceived price changes in more in the areas closer to the CBD than the outskirts, where there's still a lot of issues and around the many investors that want to get out of those areas, and I feel that that's what Catherine is alluding to, and that's where she's going. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting if there is another rate drop to see what happens.
Yes, well, I think the general consensus is that the next rate cut won't happen next month. It's more likely to be further down the track, and particularly because of the strong employment data that came through subsequent to the RBA. In fact, I made a post called Australian Jobs Up, Unemployment Up, but What's Under the Hood, where I discuss some of the implications and issues and to what extent you can trust that data, because the data wasn't necessarily telling the full story. And it's interesting that Michelle Bullock, when she was in front of the Economics Committee the end of last week, did make the point that there's a bit of uncertainty about what this neutral level is for unemployment. You know, the RBA is consistently said, "Oh, we need to see unemployment up to about 4.5% to be able to get the economy in line," whereas in fact, some people are saying, "Well, maybe that's a bit lower." Interestingly, of course, the RBA is projecting inflation at 2.7% ahead. So that's above the 2.5% target band out for the next couple of years. So they're not necessarily targeting the the central band, although she said that she was. So there's some really interesting questions, but I do think the Melbourne market is one to watch. So I've had a couple of conversations through my one-on-ones recently with people looking not at units but at houses, and some of those houses now are actually looking like pretty fair value, and not necessarily in all places, and not necessarily in areas where there are significant planning changes, but elsewhere, there look to me to be some quite interesting and quite, you know, fair value properties in and around Melbourne now, which is quite interesting. So your theory that people might be actually thinking of buying in Melbourne, I think is right. I'm certainly seeing that from my one-on-one conversations. So that'll be really, really interesting to see how that plays out ahead. I suppose we should just touch on the listings, and you know, as with all of these things, you know, the data is interesting. If we look at the story in Sydney, first of all, on the 17th, there were 19,559 property listed. If we jump forward to the 24th, 19,478. So that's interesting. So it suggests that maybe listings are you know, maybe getting a bit tighter. Trending is looking as though it might be not growing as much as well. What are you making of the Sydney listing story, Edwin?
Well, look, I think a lot of people are starting to prepare for the colder months. And in general terms, even if you look at the chart over the previous 2 years, they sort of pegged back and they went, they dropped, and that's just the season, right? But in this case, obviously we got to wait till at least, another 4 to 5 weeks down the track to see how the elections are going to affect people taking properties off the market. And later on, we're also going to see those 25 suburbs that I've been looking at as to how they're trending and what's happening there. And which is that chart that you just brought up there. That's rather interesting, Martin, because across the board on that chart there, what we've got is we've got a drop in freestanding home listing numbers right across the board. The outstanding areas are Penrith. You got a big decrease and took my attention on all from that's all listing, any listing to freestanding homes. They went down considerably. Cabramatta, the surrounding areas dropped considerably. It caught my attention. Likewise with DY, it was across all facets there. Bondi, the surrounding areas dropped considerably in terms of freestanding homes. Bondi didn't move much at all. Kings Park, where you would normally have anywhere between 8, 9, and 10 freestanding homes for sale, there's only three for sale at the moment. So you, but across the board, freestanding homes, pulled back. Some a lot more than others, which are the highlighted ones there in the chart. But apartment numbers On the other hand, or which would I would make the assumption that all because we're including apartments and townhouses on those numbers, they in most cases they increase. So there's a lot more apartments coming on the market, and if I drill down on each suburb, if I drill down on what to get a better indication and actually go through the listings on the portal, look, I bet I put 10 bucks on it that most of them are your high-rise apartments that have been built in the last within the last 10 years. That many of are offloading, but freestanding homes, that is where the that is still in high demand, and they are pulling back, and it's going to be interesting to see how much more they pull back over the next 5 weeks, and more to the point also when they call the election.
I think the election is definitely haunting people a little bit at the moment. And of course, the question is whether, in fact, some of those properties were sold, which is why listing numbers have come down, or whether, in fact, people took them off the market. And I had a couple of conversations this last week with people who actually listed directly after Christmas, didn't get anything close to the price that they wanted to get by way of offers, and have decided just to wait and to see what happens post the election and post the rate cuts. So it could be a little bit of a change of uncertainty levels as well, which is adding to the mix. If we look at the Melbourne story, interestingly, on the 17th, 28,301 properties listed. Houses still the biggest number there, 28,301. Following week, 24th, 28,273. So in the Melbourne situation, listings are still rising, although they're not rising quite as fast for the reasons I think we discussed. And if we look at Brisbane, on the 17th, 3,829 compared with 3,919. So a further rise in on the 24th there in Brisbane as well. So Sydney going down, the other two going up slightly. And looking at the auction data, you can see there that there's still quite a lot of auctions planned. And I guess we're probably hitting peak auction now, aren't we, pretty much, Edwin?
Yeah, and look, it'll be the numbers could remain around this this level for another few more weeks, and then again they may drop off a little bit, and then they'll wait it out until for the numbers to increase again in spring. Spring is really where a lot of the auction numbers come on, and nobody really wants to hold an auction. If you have a choice, if you can wait, you wait for spring. Rather than putting your property on the market by way of auction in the smack bang in the middle of winter, where you're susceptible to the weather and the cold, it all comes back to what your needs are, what your desires are, and also what's happening around in your area. For the same token, when you look at an area for to buy into, you look at what's happening there. Likewise, you look at what's happening in your immediate area and your surrounding suburbs. To determine whether or not you go to market or you wait it out a little bit. So there are a lot of factors that take that control those that those two scenarios, whether you're selling or whether you're buying. The interesting thing there, Martin, is with regards to when you did the comparison with the auction numbers from 24 to 25, or and if you look at percentages, I mean, we're tracking a lot less in terms of numbers. In terms of percentages, where you could say we're starting to, get, these are again, these are just the percentages reported by Domain, right? These are just the by the auction clearance according to from 24 to the mainstream from 24 and 25. Take it for what, take it as numbers. I still, I believe that as the desired homes dwindle away or fade away for winter, and if there's a greater pullback because of winter and the elections, well, then those reports for auction clearance rates are only going to get look a lot better in terms of percentage wise from for 2025 than than we had in 2024. That's just an observation. Doesn't mean much more than that for us, because there are other things that we look at for our clients, and we look at, when we're assisting our clients to sell and to buy.
Absolutely. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And I've had a couple of chats with people about whether, in fact, auctions make sense or whether they're not. And again, I think it very much depends on what's happening locally. I think it depends on the type of property. I think it depends on how the agent is thinking about the situation too. Some agents, of course, are actually doing the right thing and saying, well, don't think you should go to auction. I think it's probably better to, run a different sort of campaign. Others, of course, are very much driven by, well, if I go to auction, I get extra marketing dollars and I can compress the sales time frame, perhaps, and therefore make more money more quick. So you've got to be careful about the motivations of the agents too. So very, very interesting, interesting stories when it comes to do I go to auction or not. We might just touch on the rental situation. So in Sydney on the 17th, 11,493. On the 24th, 10,400, sorry, 10,741. And Melbourne on the 17th, 11,565. And on the 24th, 11,143. So we are continuing to see the same old trends of the demand for rentals still quite strong, the number listing still going down a little bit. And again, in my conversations over the last couple of weeks, more people are complaining about the fact that the rents are still going up dramatically. I don't think anybody in the rental sector is taking Chalmers seriously about the investors should be putting the rent down. I don't think we're going to see that. So unfortunately, the rental story is a pretty bad one, actually. I just to sort of give you a bit of a sense here, I don't know whether you saw this, but in Victoria, there was this article suggesting that 20,000 rentals have been shed in 18 months. The decline is a strong indicator of investors withdrawing from the rental market. And I think that's a very important leading indicator of what's actually going on at the moment. So no real relief, I think. And whilst, as we've said, the official rental growth might be coming back, I think that actually on the ground, it's a much more tight story. And as a result of that, we're seeing high rental stress in what we're looking at the moment.
But Martin, weren't we told that if you take if you take an investor out of the equation and you put that rental property on the for sale market, that means that a renter is going to buy that property, and therefore it's going to get easier, and therefore things are going to get better. I think that's what a lot of people and a lot of commentators that should have no that have got no idea and should have should shouldn't even have a voice come to. I've been saying, when the WeChat chatterers almost 2 years ago, on 2 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, when we alluded and said that the WeChat chatterers were getting out of Melbourne, I bought out on the show, we bought out and we discussed the similarity of doing away with negative gearing as to what's happening with the draconian government policies that were implemented, which drove the investors away from Melbourne, and how it doesn't work in the short term. Who knows in the long term? We'll wait for the long term, but in the short term, it was never going to work, and they're still going to suffer, and they will continue to suffer. And only now the mainstream media are saying that they've realized that the 20,000 rentals have been shed over the last 18 months in Melbourne. Hello, we told you what was going to happen 2 years ago. Subscribe to VFA. Come on the Tuesday night, live rants, and get involved. Get some. Some people just should not be writing on these, on the so-called, shouldn't be reporters on the domains, AFRs, Sydney Morning Heralds, and everything. They shouldn't carry the title of property reporters when they don't know, they don't have a freaking clue what they're talking about. They don't have an idea. And these other commentators on social media platforms that have got no idea, they've gone nowhere near. They don't even leave the basement of the parents' homes to even go to an open house inspection, and yet they call themselves property experts, or come up with some fanciful websites that chase asking prices and the like. I mean, the list goes on. They get you going. I better stop then if I
Simmer
get myself
down,
in
simmer
the
down, simmer
trouble.
down. Exactly right. Well, folks, just remind you, you hear it here first on the Property Rants. We are a finger on the pulse. We know what's going on, and we don't just spruik the bullshit. Now, talking about spruiking, there's a very important message you've got tonight, Edwin, about extra cash for people if they know where to look.
Yeah, look, if you share that video, this is a video with one of our followers that he's retired. He's the unfortunate thing for him, the poor bastard, he's got an investment property. And because he's got an investment property, he doesn't qualify for any government concessions or government handouts. But because he's entrepreneurial, and he goes around and he's done a deal with local clubs and organizations where he lives, and he basically goes and cleans out the recycling bins and basically collects the recycled waste, which is your cans and other to take to the return and earn facilities. And this is what keeps him going. Just because you've got an investment property doesn't mean that you're flush with cash, or you may not necessarily be in need of day-to-day money. So you may be able to get along with the rental income, providing that there's nothing owed on the property. But even then, you're still up for cost and maintaining the property whilst it's being rented, and you got to maintain it to a standard suitable to rent it out. So those blue bags, they represent, he tells me, the compressed cans represents $50 worth, such as the dark green ones, the worth of crushed aluminium cans. So look, he's making anywhere between $900 and $1,200 a week with his little enterprise. And this is the tip. If you're short in cash, rather than just sitting at home and moping and groaning, find something, do something. I've been sharing for a number of years now. Now is not the time to be complacent. Now is not the time to wait on the government, because the governments don't care about you or me per se. They're only caring about themselves, about their well-being, about their welfare, about the $4.2 million homes on the cliff face in the Central Coast, and the $350,000 pensions for putting the cost of living up, because that's all what they're all about. So the tip is, find something that others aren't doing. And look, I know a lot of retirees and a lot of people our age, Martin. We sometimes we've got to put our pride aside and, hey, get down and get dirty and make it happen. But you find that there's to be able to earn anywhere between 900 and 1200 bucks a week, doing a contra deal with a local club, local clubs and local pubs, by helping them to maintain the grounds, keeping them rubbish free, and then you've got open slather on what you can get out of the recycling bins. Well, hey, it's not bad, is it? Not a bad little part-time job, is it?
No, it's not. And it's interesting that without throwing rocks at people, I quite often have conversations with younger aspirational buyers of property who want a property with all of the bells and all of the whistles, the fitted kitchen and the best location, et cetera, as a first-time buyer. And sometimes I think that we've lost the plot a little bit. in this idea of having to actually work at things and you know, not necessarily buying the one you want to buy, but the one you can afford to buy initially and build on over years, and be prepared to duck and weave and, you know, just do the extra mile, do the extra job to be able to actually generate a little bit of extra income. I do feel that sometimes there's an aspiration out there that somehow magically it all happens, you know, somehow da-da, here it is, right? And actually there were very few people, if you go back over you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, my own experience of buying my first property, it was tough. It was really, really, really tough. And sometimes I wonder whether in fact part of the problem these days is that we don't have the let's get it done attitude. We have a rather different attitude.
Yeah, and that, and sadly, that is the downfall of many. But like you said, without throwing, you know, throwing stones at people, without calling, you know, saying anything further, other than hey, there's a lot of other stuff that you can that you can be doing. Look, Martin, I've got clients that we've helped to buy homes for. And they're forever asking me. And as you know, post the purchase, we also assist with the maintenance of properties and further renovations of properties. But one of the areas where we seem to be, you know, have a huge shortcoming is a cleaning crew that you can trust. And you know, they are. And guess what, Martin? You know, there are cleaners out there that are earning anywhere between $80 to $120 per hour. I know it sounds, but that's what they can earn. In a lot of cases, they don't necessarily take on the job on a per hourly rate. They take it on as a job. To give you an idea, from a cleaning point of view. When you do a renovation of a home, or a full renovation of a home, or when a property, a home is being newly built, and you want to get a professional cleaner in, and to do what's called a deep clean, that could cost anywhere between $1,700 and $2,300. And you know, a crew of two or three individuals will knock that over in a day. So. Yeah, do the math. But why? Because not a lot of people want to clean. Not a lot of people. It's beyond them to clean. That's sad. That's, you know, the sad side of the coin.
Well, it is interesting, Edwin. When I sold my last property, I did the deep clean myself because I wasn't prepared to pay the astronomical amount, and you know, it was a hard day's work. But I did it myself, and well. You know, good exercise, I suppose. Edwin, as always, amazing stuff we covered this evening. Thank you very much for your time. As always, we'll be back next Monday for another rant. Look forward to that, and have a good week meantime.
Likewise, Martin. You take care and look after yourself, and happy warmer weather for you in England as we walk into our colder months.
Absolutely. The daffs are coming out now, so spring is definitely being sprung. Take care. See you next time. Cheers.
All the best. Bye.